This is Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, here's Gary and Rob. And happy New Year to everybody. Well, happy Talking.Golf New Year to you. This is Rob Hernandez along with Gary D'Amato, our first Talking.Golf podcast of the year. Gary, welcome aboard. Happy New Year. You'd like to think we're coming off of a long sabbatical from golf, but it's been anything but that.
Yeah, we've both been busy. The golf world's been busy, and it's good to be back and doing a podcast again, Rob.
Well, you mentioned the golf world's been busy, and in Wisconsin, a couple of big things just in the last week that really dominated the headlines. One was the announcement that the Bull at Pinehurst Farms in Sheboygan Falls is going to auction, and that generated a ton of interest. And then, of course, the passing of Pete Dye, who really, I think, in some small way, Gary, led to courses like the Bull being built in Wisconsin because of his impact on golf at the Kohler properties. Let's start first with the Bull, because that is the one that has really generated a lot of feedback. I think we looked it up. It's set records on our website at Wisconsin.Golf in terms of most page views. Dennis McCann's story that it's set to be sold at a sheriff's auction. Your thoughts on that news? I know we've heard a lot, late last year, that David Bachman was having trouble keeping it financially viable. This, to me, is heartbreaking on a number of fronts. First of all, David's a great person. I've gotten along with him wonderfully, and yeah, he built this course for all the right reasons. But your thoughts on this news and what it might mean to Wisconsin golf?
Yeah, Rob, it's, you can't say you were completely blindsided by it, because as you mentioned, Dave's had some struggles up there for some time. I know back as far back as 2011, he faced a foreclosure and he fought his way through that. And so he's always had, I think, a little bit of a hard time getting footing, getting traction and getting, making money up there. So I guess this news wasn't shocking, but it's sad, because Dave's done a lot for golf. I mean, they've had a state am up there, and he's done some really good things for golf in our state. Now going forward, the big question is, what's going to happen to the Bull? Is the bank going to own it? Is someone going to step in and buy it? Is Dave going to be able to put some money together with possibly some partners and keep it going? It's something that we're going to obviously pay close attention to in the coming weeks here.
And for those who haven't read the story yet, it's on Wisconsin.Golf, written by Dennis McCann. And the sheriff's sale is set for January 28th at the Sheboygan County Courthouse. And that was set after a foreclosure judgment in October. And at that point, the Bull was in default to Wisconsin Bank and Trust for loans totaling more than $4.2 million. And again, it's kind of like, so you want to play golf on the PGA Tour, fasten your seatbelts. You want to own a golf course, fasten your seatbelts. I mean, This isn't easy, is it?
No, it's not. Dave's got a wonderful product up there. The golf course is really good. Obviously a Nicklaus signature course, the only one in the state. And, I think he faced some challenges from the start, being in the Kohler company, literally in the backyard, a half a mile from Black Wolf Run. That's some pretty stiff competition. I think location, geography, and price point all were a little bit, added to the challenge of making money up there. But Rob, you've played the course, I know, and it's a really good track. A lot of memorable holes on it. So we can only keep our fingers crossed that somebody's going to step in here and keep it going.
Well, and the other thing, David Bachman was very, he shared the golf course with a lot of different people on a lot of different levels. We have this annual Writers' Cup competition between the golf writers from Wisconsin and Illinois. That's been there a couple times. Yeah. But the annually hosts the WPGA Junior Best Ball Championship. Anytime that there was a need, for a major competition, Dave Bachman would step up and offer up the Bull at Pinehurst Farms. And again, it goes back to that question, Gary, how do you get it, how do you make it so it honors the Nicklaus signature course expectations, yet is, available to the average golfer who would obviously love to play a course of that magnitude? Is that the balance we're looking at here for whomever might take it over?
I think that's exactly the balance, Rob, is How do you maintain it at a level that's commensurate with a contract with Nicklaus? There are certain provisions that you have to adhere to keep that Nicklaus signature designation on your course. And then, you know, as Dave has done some discounting over the years, but the steep discounting that he probably would like to do, he couldn't do, as far as I understand, because of terms of that Nicklaus contract. So that's the balance, Rob, is how do you get people there and able to afford it and play it? Because once you play that course, I mean, it's a lot of fun to play in. And that stretch of holes, Rob, in the middle of the front nine with the ravine, I think that's one of the best stretch of golf holes in our state. So that's going to be the challenge to Dave or whoever else, you know, takes over, is how do you keep that Nicklaus signature primitor on the course and still be able to get people there and make money?
Let me ask you one other question about the bull and kind of the landscape of golf around that area. After Black Wolf Run opened, after Whistling Straits opened, and we saw the construction of not only the bull, but the bog, the original golf country club of Wisconsin, which is now Fire Ridge in Grafton, stretching all the way down to back. This was right when, Brown Deer Park was hosting the GMO, and it was, and it still is, one of the premier public courses in the state, and especially municipal, type courses. But, did we maybe overextend our reach in that area? Or what do you think the challenges are right now? Because I don't think maybe, in my opinion, the bog, commands quite the reverence that it did when it opened. I hate it that novelty wears off in anything, Gary, but especially in the golf business and especially the golf course business, because we've talked to these owners, through the years, and we know what they've, the personal stake they have in this, but, has that novelty worn off in terms of high-end golf in that area?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Rob. I think to some extent it has. I think you're right with the overreach. I think, not only here, not only in southeastern Wisconsin and extending north up toward Green Bay, but all over the country, golf is overbuilt. And I think, the last couple of years we've seen the consequences of that. Tiger Woods was going great guns, had come along, and, people were excited. There was a huge buzz around golf, and the economy was pretty good, and people were building golf courses. And then, 2008 came along, and a lot of things happened there. So I think, I think some areas of the state definitely were overbuilt, and now those areas are feeling the pinch as golf has sort of flatlined, or participation numbers have, remained steady or dropped in recent years. And it's hard to make money owning a golf course. It just is.
Well, and one thing Dennis McCann points out in the story too, is the fact that after the bowl opened, we've also had the addition of Erin Hills and Sand Valley, two really high-end golf courses. Obviously, Erin Hills hosted a U.S. Open. Sand Valley is going to host a state amateur in a couple of years, and has become kind of another one of those destination courses that, again, is trying to capitalize on Wisconsin now being in that sphere, on that radar, and, going back to Century World, at the start of it all, you just wonder what the tipping point is. We hope it hasn't come for the bull, but as Gary said, we'll continue to monitor what happens there as we get closer to that anticipated sheriff's sale on January 28th in Sheboygan County for the bull at Pinehurst Farms. Gary, another unfortunate story that, we didn't want to write, but you knew that at some point Pete Dye was in failing health here the last couple of years, and he passes away last week, I believe at the age of 94. A great life lived by that man, and a great impact on golf in Wisconsin. And I know that you had a chance to meet with Mr. Kohler up at Whistling Straits, and together they were the dynamic duo of high-end golf in Wisconsin.
Yeah, no question about it, Rob. Pete definitely left his footprint on Wisconsin in so many ways. Not only Stephen Kohler, but, he and Jack Nicklaus, the second design they did together was the old Briar Patch at Grand Geneva, which is now Highlands and been redesigned. And then, of course, Pete Dye designed Big Fish up in Hayward. But primarily he was known for, obviously, his courses for the Kohler Company. And that was the impetus, really, for a lot of things that happened in golf since 1988 in our state, including major championships and other courses being built, and Wisconsin moving to the forefront, really, as a destination golf. We were a flyover state before Mr. Kohler and Mr. Dye got together, and we're no longer a flyover state. People are coming to our state to play golf.
I think all of us have a story of Pete Dye during our times up at the Kohler courses. I came across some pictures stashed away deep in a storage bin of it was, I believe, the fall that it opened in 98. And a friend of mine and I were out there. They had kind of had a soft opening that year. They let the media come out at their leisure late in the year. And I think it was October 22nd, 1998 is what I went back and found, Gary.
Wow.
And it was a dynamic day. I mean, it had to have been 50 degrees late in October along the shores of Lake Michigan. I should have played the lottery that day. And not only did we have a wonderful time on a brand new course that was going to change the landscape of golf in Wisconsin, but we came across Pete several times during our round. And one time he was on a tee box showing a couple, you know, what he had designed. And then another time, he stopped and posed for pictures. And he reminded me of like a proud parent at the birth of a child, because this was, he built some of the great courses in this country, TPC at Sawgrass and PGA West, that, you know, for many years commanded the attention of the golf community nationwide. But when Whistling Straits was built, Gary, and you know this very well, I mean, that changed even his bar. That was, I think, as good a design as he had had at that point. And to think that it was in Wisconsin, I think, as we look back on it, just hard to fathom.
It is. And just, I think Whistling Straits, you know, of all of Pete's great golf courses across the country, and you mentioned a few of them, and Kiawah Island and Harbortown, but I think Whistling Straits actually goes to, his creativity and his imagination more than any other course. Because as you know, Rob, as many of our listeners know, that was an ugly, flat piece of ground before he got a hold of it. And granted, he probably had an unlimited, he probably had a blank check and probably exceeded the budget on that one even. But, you know, to move the amount of dirt he moved, to push a bluff back and create those mounds and truck in all that sand and turn it from an ugly flat piece of ground into something that looks like it could be on the Irish coast. I mean, that was just an amazing engineering feat, first of all, but I think it showed just exactly how creative and how big of a genius he was.
Well, and especially, you know, when you think about, all the kind of courses that we had to that point. And I wrote about it last week when I wrote about my experience golfing out at Torrey Pines here in advance of the Farmers Insurance Open. But, I mean, Whistling Straits was the first course that I ever, it really ever took my breath away when I came around the clubhouse to look at those holes. You'd heard all about them the first time you walk out there. And I'm sure you were the same way the first time that you came around that great clubhouse that they have up there. And looked out, and all of a sudden there's golf holes that look nothing like any golf hole we'd ever seen in the state of Wisconsin. And then Lake Michigan on the far side. And it felt like I'd been to Pebble Beach once as a kid, and it reminded me of that. And, this was just, breathtaking. And, looking back at the story you wrote last week, reflecting on Pete's impact, not only did it lead to other great golf courses, but it led to all the championship golf. And now this year, the Ryder Cup that golf fans in Wisconsin have been able to enjoy. And it started, with a lot of, quote unquote, smaller tournaments, but the U.S. Women's Open, the first one that they had, remains one of the all time greats. And again, it doesn't happen if Pete Dye and Herb Kohler don't get together on a vision that was more than just one golf course. And again, I don't think we'll ever see anything like this.
Yeah, you're right, Rob. None of that happens. I mean, the U.S. Women's Open in 98 set the stage. I can remember, Rob, driving up there on the first day of the U.S. Women's Open, and there was a huge line of cars and backed up on I-43. And, just even caught the USGA and the people at Kohler off guard what the interest, the level of interest was going to be in that tournament. It showed the pent-up demand for championship golf in our state. And we're still getting big tournaments and championships, and the Ryder Cup is, of course, the biggest of all. So, Pete Dye and Herb Kohler really set the bar very high and kept moving it up higher and higher as time went on. So kudos to everything that Pete accomplished in our state and around the world.
Well, Pete Dye, a great human being, a friend of golf, and again, someone that may no longer be with us, Gary, but someone whose legacy will live on for a long, long time. as we segue to breathtaking golf, both you and I have had the wonderful opportunity to play some great golf here in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Which I guess we you know, that's one of those conversations where you got to talk in hushed tones because of what's going on weather-wise here as we get into the brunt of winter. But you need to tell the listeners who didn't get a chance to maybe read, you know, every word of what you wrote from the Century Insurance event out in Hawaii, the Tournament of Champions. What a great opportunity for you to see exactly the reach of that company again, which kind of, you know, set the standard in Wisconsin when they opened Century World. They now have not only redesigned and re, you know, purposed and brought Century World back up to, you know, its original, you know, standards, but they've now also gotten involved elsewhere in the golf business, and the sponsorship of the Tournament Champions is one. You got to see it firsthand. Your impressions of what Century is doing out there in Hawaii.
Well, Rob, you know, Maui has sort of become a second home for Century Insurance. You know, that it's a place now that they're bringing their clients and their big customers to enjoy a week on the island and play golf, play in the pro-am. But they're having a big reach into the community and the charities they're supporting. And they're doing more than writing a check. I mean, I don't mean this to sound like a commercial for Century Insurance by any means, but it's not just a big company coming in for a week, writing a check and leaving. They're similar to what AmFam, you know, is doing in Madison. Their outreach into the community is really, you know, I talk to a lot of people on Maui, just in restaurants and on the beach and around the swimming pool at my hotel. And everyone's really excited by the energy and enthusiasm that Century has brought there, not only to the golf tournament, but to the island, to the area. And Rob, as far as golf courses, man, the Plantation course instantly jumps into my top 10 and maybe top five visually. It's an unbelievable place built into the side of a mountain. TV, it's one of those places, Rob, that TV cannot, it's like the Masters, Augusta National. TV just doesn't do it justice. The elevation change and standing on those tees with the bay and the channel between Maui and Molokai and the whales in the distance. And it's just, it's otherworldly. It really is.
And you got to play with a PGA Tour professional in the Pro-Am, Graham McDowell. And
yeah.
Jerry, I don't know what you did to him, but did you see what he did yesterday at the Sony Open in Hawaii?
Yeah. You know, in the Pro-Am, he didn't play all that well. And, of course, it's a Pro-Am. Look, he's there to make sure we have a good time. And he did that. He was a great pro in the Pro-Am, just a great ambassador for the PGA Tour. So, you know, but at the same time, it was a practice round for him. And it wasn't like he wasn't trying, but he didn't play all that well. And I was a bit surprised. You know, he played pretty good in the Tournament of Champions, and then he played great in the Sony. So, you know, he's got a new swing coach, and he said he likes some of the changes he's made in his swing, and obviously they're paying off. So, yeah, I'm kind of a closet Graham McDowell fan now because I couldn't have had a better pro-am partner, Rob.
Well, he must be a closet Gary D'Amato fan, too, because the guy goes out and shoots 71, 69, 67, 64. So whatever he absorbed watching you and your game, Gary, is certainly rubbed off because, I mean, you know, what is he? He's 40 years old now, so he's kind of hit that little crossroads that a lot of golfers do in their career between 40 and 50. And, you know, I it was a name when I saw it, when you posted the picture of the two of you. I mean, he won last year. It was in an opposite field event down in Punta Cana and resort. And, you know, I had another, you know, top 10 here or there, but I mean, he hasn't been, you know, on the kind of the front burner of guys you pick going into majors like he once was. And I'm with you. I'm a Graham McDowell fan now, just because he played with you, he's off to a great start, and who knows? He keeps playing like that, and maybe someone that Europe has to think about for the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, exactly. He really wants to make that team. I mean, that's one of the things he stressed when, you know, I got to write in his card for a few holes and interview him, and he talked about how badly he wants to play on that team. And he said, if I don't make the team, I'm going to be there in some capacity. So I would, you know, he's very good friends with Padraig, so he would be an assistant captain if he doesn't make the team on his own. But Rob, you know, talk about cool. You know, I wrote that column about my experience and just kind of had fun with it. And the next morning I got a message from him saying, hey, Gary, that was really a fun read. I really enjoyed it. Good playing with you. I mean, how many guys on the PGA Tour would do that, you know?
No, not at all. That's amazing. That is just amazing.
I can't believe it.
Yeah, exactly. We, I, and, you know, I think that's the neat thing here as we start 2020 between the, you know, the great response in terms of number of eyeballs on the story that Dennis McCann wrote on the Bull. Obviously, a lot of people interested in Pete Dye's legacy, but, you know, we just keep picking up readers here. And I think part of that is that people are discovering that golf is no longer just a 6-month endeavor in the state of Wisconsin. And there are people making a difference here year round. And to segue into the tournament that I'll be covering next week, I'll be up at the American Express in Palm Springs this week. We'll talk about that in a second because Steve Stricker and Mark Wilson will make their season debuts there. But we've got a story coming up on Monday. I got to go down to Torrey Pines last month and talk to three people from the state of Wisconsin who are in a leadership role in helping run the Farmers Insurance Open, which will be where Tiger Woods makes his 2020 debut next week, along in a field that includes Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, Justin Rose, who won it last year. And it's really become a great tournament early in the season on the PGA Tour schedule, in part because of Tiger's continued support. Phil Mickelson coming back to play in it this year as well after missing last year. But again, you know, it's a guy, Tim Young is the president of the Century Club. He's from Monona, another a woman from Kenosha, and a guy, Andrew Hartmatis, that is from West Allis. And he is the senior VP in charge of tournament affairs and events for the Farmers Insurance Championship. Got, you know, cut his teeth under Dan Croak with the Greater Milwaukee Open, and, you know, grew up on the Milwaukee County, you know, golf course parks golf courses. And again, it just you never know where you're going to find someone from Wisconsin, do you, Gary?
No, that'll be a real cool story, Rob. I'm looking forward to that one. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. You know, the superintendent at the plantation course on Maui is from Menominee Falls. So you're right, Rob. I mean, our Wisconsin people are all over the world when it comes to golf, in a lot of administrative capacities and some of these tournaments, too.
And I don't know what it was like for you growing up, Gary, but I mean, I grew up kind of in that Andy North era, like Steve Stricker, Jerry Kelly have said, you know, time and time again, you know, Andy was kind of the guy that a lot of people look to, you know, to kind of set that bar high, be that, you know, you want to be the next Andy North because he won 2 U.S. Opens. Now you have so many role models, whether it be at the, you know, at the professional ranks, whether it be people who own golf courses, whether it be people who are competing at a high level in college. You know, I'm sure a lot of people are trying to emulate Jordan Niebrugge, Charlie Danielson and that group. But it's amazing how much, you know, how many people out there are setting such a high bar in what they do for golf in Wisconsin.
Yeah, no question about it, Rob. I don't know that I can add much to that. I think you just said it all there.
Well, and one of the guys that is kind of that role model for today's generation, Steve Stricker, gets his season started at the Amex up in La Quinta, California, just over the mountain from where I'm talking right now, Gary. And we knew that Steve was going to play a lot of the PGA Tour this year because of his role as the Ryder Cup captain. And he's going to do it this week. As I wrote about in the short piece that we wrote and posted over the weekend, there aren't a whole lot of guys that are in that top 10 that'll be, you know, almost a lead pipe cinch to go to Whistling Straits for the Ryder Cup. But there's a lot of guys between 10 and 25 that are fighting to get in that top 10. I think those are the guys to start with that Steve wants to see.
Yeah, I'm sure he's, you know, he's going to play a lot on the PGA Tour, Rob, as you've written about, as we've both written about. A lot of things to look forward to. You know, he can not only can he watch guys play in the tournament, but he can request, obviously he can request to be paired with people too, and the PGA Tour is going to try to honor that to help him out. So I was surprised, though, Rob, that you mentioned that Steve has a little elbow issue. I hadn't heard of that cropping up before. Did he go into any detail with you about that?
Not yet. And again, I don't know if it's anything significant because I know that if all goes well this week in Palm Springs, he does plan to play next week in San Diego. And at the same time, though, Mario Tiziani, his brother-in-law, caddy, and agent, also said that he has plans that to probably play the AT&T with maybe with Toby Keith again. And then the other one, big one out here is going to be the Genesis Now Invitational. It's no longer an open. It's an Invitational Tigers tournament at Riviera. And that's where Tiger will be again. And that's where I think Dustin Johnson will make his season debut. And so, you know, a chance to look at a lot of guys. I know next week at the Farmers, Gary Woodland, Xander Schauffele, and Tiger Woods all in the field. You know, again, it just, you know, you want to get a good feel. You want to be there for, you know, to be a sounding board for these guys early in the year so you can make some decisions and kind of, you know, formulate a game plan. But, you know, again, as you and I have talked about over the, you know, the year plus that we've done these podcasts, you never know who's going to be the next, you know, big name and the next guy that he, that Steve's going to have to consider because, you know, that, that list that, you know, now keeps getting updated weekly is going to change. And you're going to see a lot of movement. You know, Keegan Bradley made a move in these first couple events for the better. And, you know, Ryan Palmer's played well. You know, obviously I think Phil Mickelson's going to play this week, next week, and probably, you know, down the road trying to, you know, again, gain points and be a guy that, that, you know, Steve can't say no to, but boy, the number of people that need to, you know, that want to be able to say that to Steve is like you wrote today. I mean, there's a lot of postcards that are going to come in saying, hey, Captain Stricker, don't forget about fill in the blank. Yeah. Because a lot of people have the, either the experience or their star is rising to a point where, you know, they really can't be overlooked.
Yeah, we, you know, obviously 8 months to go or 7.5 months before Steve names his at-large picks. But, Rob, there's some really young kids, too, who are making their mark and, you know, playing really well. Matthew Wolf and Colin Morikawa and others who are 20, 21, 22, 23 years old. I think it would be just amazing to see a Ryder Cup teammate of some really gritty, hard-nosed veterans who have been through the wars and then have a couple of those young kids on the team to add the excitement and exuberance of youth. It's that team could go in any direction right now. There's so many people that we're going to be fighting for these spots.
Yeah, you got that right. And that's what's made the Hawaiian swing so much fun is to be able to watch those guys. You mentioned Morikawa. You know, it's kind of like the stock market. You know, these two young guys have gone, you know, their stock has gone up. I'm not saying Cameron Champs has gone down, but he slid from 42 down to 49 in the Ryder Cup rankings that are out today. And, you know, but that's going to happen a lot. I mean, who's playing, how well they're doing. If you get a top 10 or a top five, you're going to make a jump. And, yeah, I can't wait. We should almost put, you know, what, you know, our 12 names in a hat, you know, your hat, my hat, and bury them in a vault. And then, you know, come September 1st, see, how they jive with what Steve Stricker is ultimately, you know, has to work with in terms of the eight guys that qualify on points and the four that he gets to choose. I don't know. I don't know if I could, I don't know if I could bat 500 in that scenario. Do you?
No. And Rob, you raise an interesting point. Maybe we can, do some kind of contest on Wisconsin.golf, you know, with readers, you know, set a cutoff date of June 1st or something. Who do you think the 12 players are going to be in?
Sure.
And give something away to someone who gets closest. I don't know if anyone would get it right.
I'm adding that to the planning meeting for next Monday, Gary. So we'll put that, we'll put that on the agenda. I think that's a great idea. Speaking of the Hawaiian swing, one of the Wisconsin golfers that got his season started, Jerry Kelly, playing on the regular tour for possibly the only time this year. He told me last month that he does not plan to play at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am with Aaron Rodgers. In fact, since the Packers won yesterday, Gary, it keeps alive Jerry Kelly's dream of Aaron Rodgers being in Miami the day that he lands coming back from a senior event in Morocco and that everybody can be watching the Super Bowl. And instead of thinking about Aaron Rodgers swinging a golf club, that would be nice. But it was nice to see Jerry Kelly play well, especially yesterday. He birdied the final three holes to shoot 68. I believe he finished tied for 45th. Maybe not quite the, you know, the finish he was hoping for, but you know, I think he got a few things worked out, and it was pretty windy there on the island. I'm not sure if you got out at the right time or if he got in at the wrong time, but all the TV coverage I saw, those palm trees were flapping pretty good.
Yeah, I think, you know, the first week I got there, Rob, on Maui, at the end of December, for 6 or 7 days, we had perfect weather. I mean, it was 83, sunny, not a cloud in the sky, and no wind to speak of. And then the trade winds came in, and boy, that weekend, it blew hard at Plantation Course, and it just looks like it just kept up through the week. It looked like, you know, I was gone. I was home by then, facing my own weather challenges here, but but yeah, it looked like the wind continued to blow pretty hard, and that's a really good start for Jerry. I mean, tied for 45th, you could say, well, that's pretty far down. But, you know, it's his first tournament. And he's what? Is he 53 now, Rob?
He is, yes. Turned 53 in November. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty respectable, I would say.
Well, and one of the stories I'd like to, you know, in that Jerry and I talked about, you know, every year on the Champions Tour is different because there's new golfers coming in that turn 50. And unlike, you know, when you have, you know, a Colin Morikawa or a Matthew Wolf who have really, you know, who are fighting to get that name recognition, the guys that are you know, circulating on to the senior tour are all guys that have won a lot of tournaments. And this year's class includes Jim Furyk. It includes Ernie Els, Mike Weir, KJ Choi, and on June 16th, Phil Mickelson turns 50. I want to find out this week at the American Express, you know, kind of what he's thinking about, whether we might see him, you know, and whether, you know, he would be a guy that, you know, might play in some of the majors like Steve Stricker has, maybe some of the special events hosted by guys like Stricker, American Family, hello. But, you know, Jerry has to contend not only with his body getting older, but new golfers coming in that aren't too far removed from the prime of their career.
This might be one of the best classes of rookies on the Champions Tour that I can remember in a long time. I mean, all those guys you mentioned are major champion winners, except for KJ Choi. Some of them multiple major champion winners. So, yeah, I mean, and some huge names. Obviously, Phil is by far and away the biggest name, but Jim Furyk's not exactly, you know. I mean, he won a major championship himself. He's been a Ryder Cup. He's been a captain, Ryder Cup captain. So.
And he won not so long ago on the regular tour, and that's the thing is that, and then I saw, you know, over the weekend that Vijay Singh playing at the Sony Open in Hawaii apparently has lost 20 pounds since I saw him at the Charles Schwab Cup Finals because
really,
you know, he's kind of committed to you know, a different diet and somewhat like, you know, Phil, who, you know, totally changed his body last year, and I just don't see these guys looking to leave the regular tour, but. If and when they play on the senior tour, as did Steve Stricker last year, you know, they are going to dominate, and it's going to change the complexion of that leaderboard. And I think that's what's exciting. You know, I think the senior tour, you know, was in many ways built for Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer and Gary Player and some of the great legends of the game to continue to be able to give back and compete and entertain. I think, as you said, Gary, I think this class is a bridge to another generation of those kind of golfers because – you know, let's face it, there are a lot of golfers now in the Tiger Woods era that, you know, made a name for themselves and competed at a high level that, you know, I would definitely pay money to see out there on the senior tour, you know, if for no other reason that, you know, like a Phil Mickelson's a good example. He's lost his top 50 status in the world rankings. And if he cannot be in all the tournaments that he once was, I still would love to see him compete in senior tour majors against a Steve Stricker. I think that would be great, you know, golf drama.
Oh, absolutely. I don't, you know, like, I don't know how much Phil is going to play on the Champions Tour. Most people speculate not much, but the majors, I think, would have an allure for him. And I would think he'd want to win, you know, add some senior major championships to his resume. So I would expect him to play in some Champions Tour majors.
Well, we shall see on that. The one other guy starting this week at the American Express, he won't be playing much this season because he's lost status and has also gained interest in the media side of golf. But Mark Wilson of Menominee Falls, a former champion up in the desert, he will compete this week in the Amex. And look forward to touching base with Mark and just seeing what he thinks of life behind the microphone. And not only with the Golf Channel, but if you follow Mark Wilson Golf on Twitter, what is it, On the Mark Mark Wilson? I mean, he's got the weekly, you know, quasi short little video podcast type thing. And he's very good with, you know, with his thoughts on the game of golf.
He is very personable. Very well spoken. I think he's already added to what the Golf Channel does, and I think I could see his role expanding as time goes on. I wouldn't doubt if he's in the studio someday, Rob, in a chair, you know, alongside guys like Brandel Chambly. I mean, he's that good.
Well, and then last but not least, the Korn Ferry Tour getting started yesterday, the Bahamas Great Exuma Classic at Sandals Emerald Bay, and a mouthful and a handful for the golfers competing because. Once again, the winds of the ocean's not confined to Hawaii, but also in the Bahamas, they're whipping pretty good. And Dan Woltman, Jordan Niebrugge got things going this week. Woltman shoots 73-76. He is at 5 over and currently tied for 65th. Jordan Niebrugge, 77-74. He actually gained 2 spots in the leaderboard with a 74 today. That tells you how hard the conditions are down there in the Bahamas. And right now, it looked initially like the winds were kicking up because the scores were up again today. But now it looks like some of that has kind of leveled off. We'll see if Dan Woltman can rally to get into the top. It looks like the top 70. And right now he is one shot ahead of the projected cut line. So we will see if he is able to play on the weekend. It looks like Jordan Niebrugge will come up a few shots shy. But that's the one thing. You know, the good news is they got their Korn Ferry Tour status, Gary. The bad news is they have to start the year in probably some of the stiffest conditions they're going to see all year.
Yeah, I'm looking at the leaderboard with you, Rob, and only one guy is sort of semi-tearing it up. Dylan Wu is 9-under, 4-under today, 9-under. Otherwise, you go to 5-under for the next best score, and then a bunch of guys at 4 and 3. So conditions have to be pretty tough for those guys to shoot, you know, 3, 4, 5-under for 36 holes.
And it just goes to show you that you never know how close you are to the you know, to the top of the Korn Ferry Tour versus the bottom. I believe, let me just quick call up, now I'm mixing up my Woos. Brandon Wu was the guy who tied with Jordan Niebrugge at the second stage of Korn Ferry Tour qualifying school. But we've already seen this this year, Gary, that, you know, guys that just come out of nowhere to, you know, to make a name for themselves. We've had, you know, last week at the Sony Open in Hawaii, a guy who, you know, played at USC, Monday qualified in and made the cut. You know, again, you just never know when your number is going to come up in a good way on either of these, any of these PGA tours. And, you know, whether it be the big tour or the developmental tours like the Korn Ferry Tour. I know that the Canadian Tour qualifying coming up here in about a month's time at some various spots across the country. And that tends to be the first step for a lot of these guys to get in there. And we have some guys actually from Wisconsin trying to qualify through pre-qualifying this week for the Farmers Insurance Open, trying to get to that Monday qualifier, and including Zach Gaugert of Wanakee and I believe Taylor Kozer of Rice Lake. So that process also getting started. So much to keep track of, Gary. I don't know. There is really no off season for Wisconsin golf because Wisconsin golfers are making their mark around the world. And it's fun to be able to talk about it. It's even more fun to be able to write about it.
For sure, Rob. We've got plenty to write about and talk about. So I'm looking forward to our podcast going forward, our regular weekly Monday podcast. We took a few weeks off, but we'll have no lack of things to talk about now going forward.
No, not at all. Next week, Gary will be down in Orlando for the PGA Merchandise Show. I will be down at La Jolla for the Farmers Insurance Open. We will convene via Skype again and do our Talking.Golf podcast. Gary, I think we've crammed enough into this week's podcast. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Rob. Talk to you next week.
Sounds good. For Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez, this has been Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf.